Okay, well, we'll get started, and then if people come in, we'll let them sit. But if you can't hear these guys, they have one microphone that they're going to share. If you can't hear, will you just raise your hand or say we can't hear you, and then we may be able to get this one out too. I'm not sure. Thank you for attending session 278. Entitled, When Religion Creates Dragons, Mama Dragon Panel. Before we begin, we ask that your cell phones are turned off and that those attending will be respectful and attentive. It is the mission of Sunstone to host thoughtful and respectful dialogue. Please keep that in mind when engaging in the Q&A portion of the session following the remarks. Following the remarks of the presenters. Those who cannot abide by these guidelines should refrain from commenting and will be asked to leave should they become disruptive. This session is being recorded, and you will be able to purchase it after the presentation ends at the registration desk on the main floor. Take advantage of our symposium special by subscribing to Sunstone Magazine, 7 issues for the price of 6, at the registration desk as well. Consider also purchasing Skull Candy official headphones customized for Sunstone. Your support goes directly to keeping symposiums and 40 years of thoughtful dialogue alive and sustainable. This session is 90 minutes long, and we ask both audience and presenters to keep within that time so that we can allow for the next session to start on time. As a courtesy to other presenters and to our attendees, we ask that immediately after the session you clear the room and speak outside so that other presentations can begin. Actually, I don't think there's another one after this, but still, it's good. The other one is going to be great, so you can go that after lunch or after dinner. The LDS Church can claim to love the sinner and hate the sin, but if there were real love for LGBTQ people in Mormonism, there would be no need for the Mama Dragons, a group that started with 7 women and is now almost 800 strong. Our hope is that one day there will be no need for mothers to have to turn into dragons to protect their children from their religious community. Until then, we are here with the courage, talents, and fire needed to protect God's LGBTQ sons and daughters. I want to read a brief bio of each of the women we have today. Wendy Montgomery, most of you know who Wendy is. She's kind of famous now. We all love her. She is one of the founders of the Mama Dragons and a member of the board of directors for Affirmation. She is an active member of the LDS Church and works hard from the inside to make a place for her LGBTQ brothers and sisters. Shauna Jones, who's Shauna? Shauna, okay. Lives in the countryside outside of Idaho Falls with her husband Mike and their 3 kids. With a fierce love for all of her children, Shauna is a proud Mama Dragon. Nika, thank you, sorry. I should have gotten that when I met you. Nika Allgood's middle child is FTM transgender, and since he transitioned at age 16, he and Nika have been actively working with Equality Utah to extend non-discrimination protections to include sexual orientation and gender identity. They testified before Utah State Legislature committees in 2015 as part of the efforts to pass Senate Bill 296. And finally, Melanie Delton lives in Layton, Utah. She is the mother to 3 wonderful children. Her oldest daughter identifies as gay. While a lifelong active member of the church, she no longer attends her LDS ward. For her, leaving the church was an important part of sustaining her family. Melanie recognizes the dignity and worth of every person and hopes to contribute to a more just and equitable future for all. Thank you, all 4 of you, for joining us today, and we look forward to your presentation.
The Mama Dragons began in 2013 with a small group of women coming together in a Facebook message thread to try to help a gay and gender nonconforming high school student who was facing rejection at home and school. From that small beginning, we have grown to now more than 900 mothers and mothering women. We began as a group of Mormon women, but we are now a very diverse group, including active Mormons, former Mormons, and every level of belief in between. There are also some mamas who do not come from a Mormon background. And despite our diversity, we are united in our commitment to support each other and to help each other be better mothers as we love and support our own LGBTQIA children and other young people who need an affirming adult in their lives. If you'd like to learn more about the Mama Dragons and read our mission statement, you can visit our website, which is mamadragons.org. If you or someone you know would benefit from joining our Facebook group, you can find our public page on Facebook, where there are instructions on requesting to be added to the group. The group itself is private so that we can ask our stupid questions and share the often messy real-life experiences of parenting. Our topic today is When Religion Creates Dragons. This topic is borrowed with permission from a Rational Faiths blog post by Lori Berkman. In that post, Lori shared the experiences of several mama dragons whose children had experienced rejection and hurt from LDS church leaders, ward members, and family members. Many of the mamas have experienced and been surprised by that rejection. The unkind words, the heavy-handed calls to repentance directed at children who are living worthily, or just the deafening silence of that greets our children after they come out is so difficult. It seems so far away from the Savior's command to love one another. In Luke chapter 15, the Savior taught, "What man of you, having 100 sheep, if he lose one of them, doth not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after that which is lost until he find it? And when he hath found it, he layeth it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he cometh home, he calleth together his friends and neighbors, saying unto them, Rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep, which was lost." We often talk about Christ's parable of lost sheep in church and the importance of leaving the 99 who are safe and going into the wilderness to find the one who's lost, to bring them back to the fold. I've probably read those verses 100 times, but the most recent time I read them, I thought about them differently. The fold is supposed to be a place of safety, but what if the sheepfold has wolves in it? Are we really rescuing that lost sheep if our only plan is to bring it back to a place where it might be eaten? That can be what it feels like for some of the mama dragons. It can feel like church is not a safe or healthy place for our LGBTQIA kids. As mamas, the urge to protect our children runs deep. After our kids came out, the world seemed like a scarier place, and so we have needed to be bolder and fiercer, mama dragons.
So as far as introductions go, we're each going to take a few minutes and introduce ourselves. We have some questions that we came up with that we thought were important to talk about, and then we'll take audience questions as well. So my name is Wendy Montgomery. I currently live in Chandler, Arizona. We've only been there about a year. I grew up in Southern California. I have always been a Mormon, come from Pioneer stock. My husband and I were married in the Los Angeles Temple in 1995. We have 5 children. Our oldest just turned 18. So January 2012 is when he came out to us. He was 13 at the time. And it turned my neat and tidy little Mormon life upside down. And it was, for those of you that know Jordan and have met him, you would. You're wondering why I didn't know when he was like 2 years old. Because he is fabulous and adorable. Why he's not. He is the light of my life. We have the best children. So there was never even a second, not even a question of whether we would love and accept him. My question came from, how do I do this as a Mormon? It's hard enough raising kids. And a gay kid, what do you do in the Mormon church? So the first thing we did is we went to our bishop, and he gave us an evergreen pamphlet. If you know what evergreen is, people are nodding, yeah. But one thing that I think I'm really grateful for was, I don't know, maybe I'd call it the power of discernment, or intuition, or maybe it was the spirit. I knew almost instantly when I would read something if it would be helpful for Jordan or if it would be hurt him. I read that evergreen pamphlet and went in the trash. I didn't even have Tom read it, my husband. It was horrible. We went to, I think, 8 different LDS family services. Well, 5 therapists. Sorry, 8 therapists, 5 were LDS family services, because I'm a slow learner. They were horrible, what they did to my son. And it took us finally the ninth one, we found the right one. She was wonderful for him when we were in California. But I would say one of my saving graces is sitting in the back of the room right now. Same as Mitch Rain. I sent him this very long, rambling, probably 10-page email, just emotionally vomiting about having a gay son, and I had read his story. And he called me back within about half an hour. And he was the life raft when I was drowning. He's become like a brother to me. And an uncle to my son. He put us in touch with Kate and Ryan, the Family Acceptance Project. And if you're not familiar with that work, I will tell you that it is the best resource that we have as Mormons. It is something that will help keep our children alive. If you still attend church, I highly recommend you take one of those pamphlets to your bishops or your state presidents. They need to be educated. The things we were told by our church leaders are horrific. We were told not to let Jordan share a room with his younger brother because he might molest him. And that I wasn't praying hard enough because he was still gay. I can go on and on, and these are not bad men. These are just uneducated men. So if you attend, please go talk with them. Because parents like me, and sometimes the kids themselves, will go to their bishops looking for help. And that bishop can cause a lot of damage or can really help these kids. So if you're able to educate them, I ask that you do that. So we tried two different wards in Bakersfield, California, where we were living before we moved. We had been in our first ward for about 10 years. We knew everybody. I would have considered everyone a close friend. Zero drama. As soon as Jordan came out, all of that changed within a matter of about 6 months. I had one person left that would talk to me. We had been released from our callings after people had signed petitions to have us released. This was before I even talked publicly about it. There was no advocacy at this point. It's just the fact that we had a gay child. So we had started attending another ward, and we're there for about a year and a half, and the same thing happened. So as a last-ditch effort to try and make the church work, we moved to Chandler, Arizona, which is also very conservative, but outside of Utah, they have the largest Mormon LGBT support group. It's about 500 people now. And we had already had some friends there, so it didn't feel like we were just moving blindly, and it's been a wonderful change. Speaking of the Family Acceptance Project, Dr. Caitlin Ryan just walked in. This sweet Catholic woman chose to use the Mormon Church as her first faith-based work. And if you're not familiar, it is the only faith-based work that is recognized by the AFSP, the American Foundation of Suicide Prevention, for best practice for suicide prevention. And the Mormons have it, no other religion. Thank you, Caitlin. So that's a little bit of our story. Jordan has now been out for almost 5 years. Can you not hear me? Closer?
Can you keep it closer so
we can hear? Okay, I'll swallow. So Jordan's been out almost 5 years now. He's 18, just graduated high school, and he will be going to a community college for the next 2 years and then transferring to ASU. He is totally out of the church. He considers himself ex-Mormon at this point. My daughter, Susanna, that's just a year younger than him, is also out of the church, considers herself ex-Mormon. We also have a almost 14-year-old and 10-year-old twins. There's still a question mark, but because of how much they love their brother, I don't foresee them staying either. And that's difficult for me, because if this is the Church of Jesus Christ, there should be a place for everybody. And there isn't right now. We currently have 4 kids that I know of in my ward that have come out to me, 3 of which the parents don't even know. We have 2 couples in mixed orientation marriages, one's in the middle of the doors, one's trying to make it work. And this is in a very small geographical boundary ward. I guarantee you have people in your life that you know, or maybe you don't know, that are LGBT. Be that safe place for them. Sometimes it just takes one. It's sometimes scary to stand up and say anything, but you can save a life, and that is not an exaggeration. So,
My name is Mika Allgood. My middle child, Grayson, is female to male transgender. We figured out Grayson was trans 5.5 years ago when he was 16 years old and a junior in high school. And I know you're not supposed to out your kid, but I outed Grayson to himself because he had never heard of transgender, but I felt like we needed to have that conversation, and when I explained what it was for him, it was kind of all the light bulbs going off at once. He prayed about that and got an answer simply and clearly that said he was a boy and that it would be okay. And based on that answer and his choices since then, Grayson, now 21, almost 22, is still an active member of the church. In the transgender community, or trans LDS community, we talk a lot about Bishop Roulette. and that is because, unlike if you have a gay, lesbian, or bisexual child, for transgender people, there is very little in the handbook. There are a few sentences, but that's all. And because of that, your local leadership has a lot more latitude for good or ill. And Grayson won his first spin at Bishop Roulette and has won several more since then. When we went in to talk to our bishop before Grayson did a social transition in the middle of his junior year of high school, Grayson went in and explained what he was feeling and what he was going to do. And as our bishop listened, he told me later that he thought, what would it be like for one of my priests to have to wear a dress to church every Sunday, to have to go to young women's and stand up every Sunday and recite the young womanhood theme, and that's what it had been like for Grayson. And it is my sincere belief that my bishop was blessed with the gift of discernment in that moment to understand what Grayson had been experiencing. And so while he didn't have a lot of answers, he made it clear that Grayson was still welcome to attend church. While he was living at home and in high school, Grayson went to church every Sunday after he transitioned in a suit. He sat with me in sacrament meeting. He attended his Sunday school class, and then he went home because he wasn't welcome in priesthood meeting, and he couldn't go to young women's. That was too triggering for his gender dysphoria. I've talked to a lot of transgender women since then, and a lot of them have expressed, even the ones who still very much want to be engaged in the church, that attending church by itself is very triggering for them because of how gendered our services are in terms of our clothing that is so definitely male or female, and the segregation of roles in church, that can be very triggering for a lot of transgender members. After Grayson socially transitioned, he very much wanted to go on testosterone, and so we began exploring the process of talking to a therapist about that so that he could prepare to go on testosterone and go through male puberty. The bishop couldn't find anything about that one way or another in the handbook, and so he sent a request up through church channels. And 6 months later, after Grayson was most of the way through the process of getting approved to go on testosterone, our bishop got an answer back that any physical transition, including hormones, may be cause for church discipline. Grayson was very concerned about that, and he prayed about it, and the answer he got was to wait to go on testosterone. And the feeling he got with that was that it was not being a long wait. And so we had planned on him going on testosterone the summer between his senior year of high school and when he went away to college, so he would go away to college presenting more clearly male. But he waited and instead went off to college looking and sounding like a 12-year-old boy. that I worked for him for a while. Yeah, he won a second spin at Bishop Roulette in a student award at the University of Utah. Huge shout out to the University of Utah. They are very accommodating of transgender students. Grayson's had a wonderful experience here. You know, on their housing page, it says right on the page, you know, if you're transgender, you know, call this number and we'll help you get appropriate housing. Yay! the University of Utah's Institute of Religion has also been quite accommodating to Grayson. He has sung in institute choirs most of the semesters he's been here, and he was actually in an institute choir the semester he did go on testosterone, and his choir director just had him move down, you know, so he started out a semester as a first tenor, and he ended that year singing bass baritone. So that institute teacher deserves some kind of prize as well. Grayson coped fine for about 18 months with a social transition. That was enough to ease his dysphoria, but his first semester at the University of Utah, his dysphoria, his distress about his body not matching his brain, just really ramped out of control. It was hard for him to take off his clothes to take a shower because he'd see his own body. And he was getting more and more depressed, and it got to the point where he was afraid for his own safety. He was afraid that he might harm himself. And so there was a period of time where, even though he had on-campus housing, we were having him come home every night so that we could help him be safe. And that period got more and more frightening, and as it was going on, Grayson was praying and trying to figure out what to do, and I was praying, and I was awake one night in the middle of the night. This is what it is to be a mom. How many of you guys have had mom insomnia where you're worried about your kid? And I was awake in the night thinking it, and as I thought about the experience of Abraham being asked to sacrifice Isaac, his precious son. And I thought about the sacrifice that Grayson was making by not going on testosterone, and that it was that kind of sacrifice. He was sacrificing, being who he was, being a man, in order to maintain his status with the church. And so I thought about that story. I thought about that Heavenly Father sent a ram in the thicket to save Isaac's life. And as I thought that, I had the most powerful spiritual confirmation that Heavenly Father had seen and accepted Grayson's sacrifice, and that testosterone was the ram in the thicket to save his life. And with that answer, I talked with Grayson the next day about my experience, and I said, but this is your life. You have to get this answer for yourself. And he said, well, I think I already did on the train on the way home. The answer I got was, listen to your mother. Which, in my opinion, Heavenly Father needs to tell teenagers more often. at that point, Grayson went on testosterone. Since then, he has, again, because bishops have a lot of latitude, he has had bishops who have listened to his experience and understood that for him it was life-saving medical treatment to do a physical transition. A church is a challenging place, even with welcoming priesthood leadership, but Grayson wants to continue to be active in the church. I have talked to him several times that I'm okay if he needs to leave. He is not staying for me. I am proud of him for the choices he makes, for the way he has with grace handled the difficult challenge of trying to balance being transgender and Mormon. I need to talk a little bit about my ward. I know you hear a lot of great affirming wards that live in San Francisco Bay Area or something. But my ward in uber conservative Davis County has been very good. They have been very welcoming. I had several other transgender friends who very much wanted to go back to church, and I had invited them to attend my ward. And they have been welcomed by my ward members, welcomed by the Relief Society of Listen See. There's been several trans women friends of mine who have attended Relief Society in my ward and who have been warmly welcomed there. And what they report is having had one of the most powerful spiritual experiences of their life. Dysphoria gets in the way of feeling the spirit. And when they could finally get past their dysphoria by being in an affirming place in church is when they were able to really experience what church is supposed to be like. I wish I could model what my ward is doing, which is so simple, and send it elsewhere. Because we don't have to change a word of doctrine or policy to be welcoming and kind.
My name is Shauna Jones, and I used to live outside of Idaho Falls. A couple of weeks ago, we moved to the Boise area in Idaho. But I grew up very, very stereotypically Mormon. I was born while my parents were students at BYU. I was raised in a small farming community in southeast Idaho. My favorite movie was Saturday's Warrior, and my favorite music artist was Afterglow, and Michael McLean. I loved those. My dad was a bishop. I was in class presidencies. I served as a seminary president. I went to BYU, where I met my return missionary husband, Mike. We dated for just a few months, and then got married in the temple, and not that long after, we had three kids in just three-ish years. I quit my job at BYU when my oldest was born and have been a stay-at-home mom since. We've raised our kids in the church. I've been a Relief Society president and a Stake in Women's president, and I'm currently a girls' camp director and organist and primary pianist in my ward. I've kind of lived, the Mormon mold has worked really well for me for a lot of my life. But when our oldest, Annie, turned 12 and started in women, I saw a change in her. And she started getting anxiety on Saturday night, which would kind of build, and then by Sunday morning, she was crying and sometimes in fetal position on the floor of her room because she didn't feel like she could go to church. She didn't feel like she fit in. And it was so strange for me because this is my kid who had always loved church and always knew all the answers, and the teachers loved her because she was so smart and so just attentive in class. She started saying that she didn't think she'd get married. She didn't think she'd have kids. She just was going to have a career and maybe travel, live alone, and maybe have a pet. And it was such a change for me, and I didn't really know what to make of it until about a year later when she told my husband and I that she thought she might be gay. It started to make a little more sense. And when she told us, she was really afraid that people wouldn't love her in the same way that they had, and that it wouldn't be okay, because how could people love her now that they knew, if they knew this part of her? And I assured her that it was going to be fine, and she was awesome, and we gave her a big hug and told her how much we loved her and that we'd figure it out together. But if I'm honest, like, inside I was struggling too. I was afraid of how people would treat her. I was grieving the loss of all of the dreams that I had had and that she'd had. She really wanted to serve a mission, and you know, her temple wedding and her husband and kids and all that seemed very uncertain. We still tried to get her to go to church. The last Sunday that she went to Sunday school, her Sunday school teacher taught the class a poem that went, "Read your scriptures, fast and pray, go to church and don't be gay." And she said she came home and she said everyone was laughing and thought it was hilarious. And she was devastated. So she stopped going to church shortly after that. She continued to try seminary and weekday activities for a long time until those became too painful too. Church then became painful for me too. Every time somebody talked on marriage and family, it was a painful reminder of how our family no longer fit the plan and how my child didn't fit the plan. And the proclamation on the family was this trigger phrase that brought up all this anger and frustration that there was no room for my child in Mormon theology. And I discovered that the church is woefully lacking on like concrete resources for LGBT kids and their families. So we had to find those resources, mostly with other parents that had created resources. So Annie came out to extended family right around her 16th birthday. That was kind of a crisis for her because people wanted to set her up and they were kept asking her about dating. And so she told, it was June of 2015, which just coincidentally was the month that the Supreme Court ruled that gay marriage was legal, which created kind of this ugliness on social media and at church that was difficult. And then she came out publicly in November of last year, right around the policy time that the church came out with homosexual couples and their children. So her timing is awesome. so our family has really struggled since November, and a couple of months ago, my husband and Mike and Annie both resigned, had their names removed from the records of the church. And I and the younger two have stayed so far. But it has been difficult, and I am grateful, though, for my pansexual, is now the term that she, how she identifies, child, because she's taught me a lot about expanding my ability to love, and my compassion and empathy has grown a lot. She's helped me understand things that I didn't understand before, and it has been a blessing to my family. And I'm grateful for her and all of my kids, and I just want them to be happy. And we just moved, like I said, and we've been in this new ward for a couple of weeks, and I'm feeling the anxiety of Bishop Roulette. Our last bishop was really awesome, but I'm a little anxious about how we'll be received in the next ward, but that's me.
Hi, so I really relate to Shauna's experiences. They're really similar a lot to some of my own, but different too. A really big part of my story is really connected to my Mormon story as well, and I'll make it that part brief, but I've always been a faithful, very active LDS woman. I served a mission. We were married in the temple, and the LDS church was just my life. And through a long series of events, I spent about six and a half years studying religion, religious history, Christianity, things like that. And right about a year and a half before my daughter came out to me, I had kind of lost a traditional testimony of the LDS Church. My family didn't know where I was at. I just kind of kept it on the lowdown, and but it was a really difficult time for me, and I didn't want to tell anyone until I was really sure, you know, where I stood with things. But where I ended up was that I no longer believed that there was really one, just one true church. I felt like all religions were kind of on equal footing, and that all churches had the potential for great good and for great harm as well. I was committed to the LDS Church. I stayed active my whole study period and paid my tithing and had my temple recommend. And I was committed to keep my family there because I thought it was a great place that strengthens families and teaches values that ultimately bring happiness to our lives. And so it was right around about a year and a half before my daughter came out to me that I ended up in this sort of frame of belief. And so about 6 months before she came out, she had a lot of the same issues that Annie had. She was dissatisfied at church and started feeling like she wanted a career, things like that. So I went through this period of, I would go to her with her, to her Sunday school class, because she didn't want to go by herself. And, you know, and so I'd go sit with her in class, and I really was trying to help her through this, you know. And then marriage equality became a big topic here in Utah because gay marriage was made legal. This microphone keeps going out. Yeah. So anyway, my husband and I would get on.
Try that one. So okay.
My husband and I would get, wow, that's loud. My husband and I would get on Facebook, and we would read these posts from our ward members and neighbors talking about why, you know, gay people should not be allowed to marry, and how gay people were the worst parents, and, you know, all of these horrible, horrible judgmental things. And we had some really heated discussions. And right around that time, McKenna would, oh, I didn't tell you. Oh, I'm so sorry. So I have three children, and the oldest of which is McKenna, and she is 17 years old. She just graduated from high school. She attended the Northern Academy of Math, Science, and Engineering. And a month before she graduated with her high school diploma, she graduated from Weber State University with her associate degree. And she is just this bright, beautiful, smart, kind, funny person, and she plays the piano and the violin and the guitar, and she sings, writes, and composes her own lyrics and music, and she's just amazing. And anyway, so right around that time, she would come home. She was 15 at the time, and she would read our posts, and she would just cry. And I thought, wow, she's so compassionate. She has these gay friends, and I just thought, you know, she just really feels for her gay friends, what their life is going to be like, you know. And we really had no clue. And what I didn't know what was happening for her then is that she was 15 and experiencing her very first crush. Do you guys remember your first crush? You know, the pitter-patter and the, I can't speak when you're standing next to me, the words don't come out right, I can't breathe. Those feelings of excitement, and remember how all your friends would gather around and talk about it, and it was this rite of passage, and everyone was happy for you, and you could go home and talk to your mom about this hot guy or girl that you were so excited about, and for her that was not a happy rite of passage, because here she was in the throes of why gays shouldn't marry, and so her first crush was accompanied with guilt and shame and incomprehensible fear. What is my life going to be like if I have this feeling and that makes me a bad person? But of course she could have talked to her Mormon mother about that. So that was about in February of that year. And over the next 4 months, I would watch this beautiful, bright, energetic, intelligent 15-year-old girl just implode. It was like watching a slow death. I remember turning around, looking at her. At first, she really stopped wanting to be at church. And I remember turning around and looking at her in church, and she looked like she was just in emotional hell. And I looked at her and I thought, what is wrong with her? To my shame. Now, that's the most shameful thing. But I did. And I realized finally that she needed to stop going. And so I told her that was fine. And that I just figured that, I don't know, she'd lost her testimony. And since I was kind of in the same boat, I just thought, you know, she's a smart girl. She believes in evolution. She probably just doesn't get fulfillment there. But anyway, So what ended up happening is she just developed anxiety and depression, and a really deep depression. And she was not the girl that I knew, that I had raised. And finally, I was able to get her to a doctor, and you know, you go in and you fill out these forms when you're being seen for depression, and they ask you a series of questions like, I have thoughts of suicide, seldom, often, daily, constantly, or I feel like the world would be a better place without me in it. You know, the same thing, the ABCD, constantly, weekly. And she filled out that form, and I picked it up and read it in the doctor's office, and I just sat there sobbing. I had no idea the depth of her sorrow and her self-hate at that time. And she still hadn't come out to me. But about 3 weeks later, she did. And, wow, that was a time. I knew the statistics. I mean, I knew what happens. I didn't know what we were going to do, how we were going to handle it, but I knew for sure that her depression and her anxiety was connected to this part of her life. And I was thinking, I just wanted to share with you, I don't know how many of you have had this experience, but I've sat in a room full of LGBTQ kids, and
cursed.
Hi.
I turned it off.
Push this?
Uh-huh.
Okay. I've sat in a room full of LGBTQIA kids, and the question is asked, how many of you have contemplated suicide? And every single hand is raised. And then the question is asked, how many of you have attempted suicide? And 50 to 60% of those hands are raised. And it is a powerful experience. And for me, someone who had decided to stay in the church because it was going to help my family, that was just no longer an option for me. And we have stepped away from the church. We've stopped attending. It's been almost 2 years now. We took our daughter to the Unitarian Church. I guess we're going to talk a little bit about that later, huh? Yeah. So I'll just leave it there. Okay.
Okay, so we have a few questions that we will talk it over. And if you have questions, feel free to raise your hand. And then if you want to do extra questions, that's fine too. So the first question that we came up with was, has our religion created us? And how? As Mama Dragon.
I was talking to my husband about this question on the way down today. I think that when you're a parent, you're kind of protective of your kids. And then when you see that your child is especially on the outside or has really special needs, I think you become extra protective. Our middle child had cancer when he was 2, and we became really strong advocates for him at that time for medical care and everything. And when you, so I think that I think religion in a way has made it so that we have to be fiercer, because not only are we afraid of the world, we're sometimes afraid of church, and church doesn't feel safe for our kids, and so we have to be kind of fiercely protective of them in ways that we wouldn't if it were a more loving place.
So very soon after Grayson socially transitioned, he and I started working to get housing and employment non-discrimination passed for LGBT people in Utah. And I remember vividly, you know, he'd only been transitioned for a few months, us going to our first demonstration at the state capitol, and, you know, we were holding our little signs. And I had never been to a political demonstration in my life. But there we were, you know.
And I had been asked to speak at that one, so I did. I had a little talk prepared and printed out, and that demonstration was actually so small. I think there were more members of the press there than there were actual demonstrators. It got better as time went on, but Grayson and I were quoted in the newspaper, and I got like a half a sentence on the evening news, and several, fortunately anonymous, people in my ward and stake were concerned about that and called my bishop and stake president to tell on me. And so I got called in, and I'm innocent enough that it did not occur to me until sometime afterwards that I was potentially going to have my temple recommend yanked if they didn't like my answers. But I just took in the text of my talk and, handed it to my state president and said, well, the newspapers can misquote me however they want. And indeed, in all the times I've been in the paper, they've never gotten what I said exactly right. I said, but here's what I actually said. Here's the talk I read. And my state president read it. And again, I have been so lucky. This was 5 years ago. And my state president was familiar with the content of the Mormons and Gays website. Because at that point, lots of bishops and state presidents, if parents went in and said, hey, read this, the bishop's answer would be, that's not a Mormon website, that's not a church-approved site, that's an anti-Mormon site or whatever. Actually, no, the church made it. But my state president was aware that that was an LDS site, and he was aware of the content on the site. And so as he read my talk, he was like, oh, well, this is all quotes from the scriptures and Mormons and Gays. And I said, yes. And so, so I got to keep my temple recommend and everything. But it did help me see very clearly that even in my pretty supportive ward and stake, there was going to be a social cost for my activism. And I actually switched after that to when I knew I was going to be in the paper or on TV or something. I would tell my bishop in advance, hey, there's another round of phone calls coming, to try to inoculate him against that. And I did that for a couple of years. I've stopped now because I think my whole work calms down. And there was a while where I could tell that my state president was very concerned that I was on my way out of the church. And but that kind of all went away in 2015 when the Mormon church got behind non-discrimination in Utah. And I think he's less concerned about me now. And it's funny, my political stance during that period didn't change. But the church approval of that political stance got more explicit, and that has made me safer.
I just had one thought on this question, and I'm sure all of us have felt the same thing, that having a gay child is not where the pain comes from. It's because of how we are treated, or our child is treated. And I can tell you from my experience, the most painful experiences I have had have been either at the hands of my church leaders or sitting in a Mormon chapel. And I can handle a lot. When I watch it happen to my son, I'm ready to take off someone's face. So that, I think in a way, our church, taking its very, very conservative and exclusionary stance, has created knowledge. Okay, the next question. How have we reconciled things personally in regards to religion and LGBTQIA issues, or how have we not? We've talked a little bit about that, but if you guys have more thoughts.
Yeah, this, I really wanted to answer this question because I stepped away from the church, I was racked with a lot of, am I doing the wrong thing? Am I leading my whole family to hell? Am I deceived? Is, Satan at my heels? All of those things that we, how in the last days the very elect will be led astray. Well, So one night I was just I spent a lot of nights crying, and one night I was just laying in my bed and crying and asking these questions to my Heavenly Father, and I had this very peaceful feeling come over me, and I had this image in my mind of me sitting at the computer. It was like I was looking at myself from behind, and I saw myself as I was studying all those years, all the things that I learned about religion, not just our religion, but religions in general. And I heard a voice that said to me, "I have prepared you for this. I have prepared you to love and accept your child in this way." And I just felt such a peace, and really felt that my Heavenly Father has always been there for me. Even if the church hasn't, I have always felt like he and she have been guiding my footsteps and my heart.
I think I have just kind of broken down religion to the two great commandments of love God and love others, that like everything else just feels messy to me. So that's kind of where I am with religion. I'm still going to church, but I just feel that the church has a lot of growing to do in how we respond to LGBTQ members. And in the meantime, I want to just be a safe place and show love. And so that's kind of where that's how I've reconciled.
For me, I guess I have a simple testimony that Heavenly Father and Jesus and their plan are perfect. But that the LDS Church is run by imperfect people, all of us. And I believe in continuing revelation, and I believe that in Heavenly Father's own time, he will send further light and knowledge to us. And in the meantime, I pray for God's forgiveness and grace for church leaders who I think sometimes do very hurtful things, just as I seek God's forgiveness and grace for me in my own imperfections.
So for those of us that stay and try and make it work, sometimes we differentiate between the Big C Church and the Little C Church. Big C being what happens in Salt Lake City and Temple Square. We don't have a whole lot of control over that. Can you hear? Is that better? Okay. Little C Church meaning where you would attend your wards and stakes. You have a little more influence over that. So what can be done in our spheres of influence to make our wards and stakes safer for our kids?
I have talked to my bishop a couple of times about the concerns about suicide for LGBT youth. In particular, there's been a recent, what seemed like, suicide contagion, and I went in and talked to him again, and I said, you know, we're concerned that there's an episode of contagion going on right now. Please ask the young men's and young women's leaders to be so careful about what they say. And I have given him a copy of the Family Acceptance Project booklet, and I loaned him my copy of the video when he did, and so I'm hoping that he will use those resources to help the youth in our ward. There is not, even still, there has not, other than Grayson, been an out LGBT youth in the ward other than my kid. But I'm sure there have been other kids, but mine was the only one, even in our fairly welcoming ward, who's had the courage and safety to come out. And I try to speak up when people say hurtful things. I'm really grateful that I don't have to do that every Sunday. I recognize that there are people who do, and that it's exhausting and overwhelming. And I would like to think my testimony was strong enough that even if I were in a very difficult world, I could stay, but I'm not honestly sure that that is true. I think it can be overwhelming, and I'm glad that's a design I had to deal with so far.
My husband and I have talked with our bishop and our state president about showing kindness and love, and my husband did. He was in the high priest group leadership before he left the church, and he taught a lesson on Mormons and Gays website and talked about the need for compassion and just recognizing that there is an LGBTQ person listening and sitting in your lessons, or someone who loves them. You should just always assume that there is somebody in the room, in Elders Quorum, in High Priest, in Relief Society, in Young Women's, in Young Men's, that is LGBTQ, and speak with that frame of mind and to be more compassionate. I do think that within our callings, we have a little bit of opportunity, if we're trusted with callings, to help. We had our girls' camp last week, and I did a rainbow theme. And the theme was "Let Your Light So Shine." And we talked about diversity and how we don't have to be the same color of light, and we can be different, and it's okay, and God loves all of us, and unique is good, and different is good, and we don't need to be the same. And I think little ways like that help youth and other members know that you love them and they're safe, I think that has opened up a lot of opportunity for different ward members, past and present, to come talk to me and say, my child came out, she's in the closet, or I've had a lot of opportunities to do that. So making yourself known as an ally in your ward and speaking out when you can, I think makes a big difference. It can make a big difference in the Little C Church.
So this may sound odd, but for us, stepping away was an important message for us. We were very active in our ward and always held callings and were respected. And when McKenna was gay on Facebook, we also stepped away from church. And for us, that was a clear message that what is said and done at church is not okay, and we're not going to be a part of that until the environment is healthy. When you're looking at your child taking their life and you see that, it is not something that we were willing to gamble with. So for us, while it sounds odd, that was our clear message.
Just one more thing I wanted to mention, that in the church a lot of times we use the phrase defending the family as a coded message for attack gay people and be against same-sex marriage. And we can, when the phrase defending the family comes up, talk about other ways we can defend the family. We can talk about our obligations and our own families to love and strengthen and support other family members. We can talk about being more humble and forgiving and kind. We can talk about caring for the poor in our communities, because poverty is a major stressor on families. And I think we can, by doing that, maybe help get beyond that coded message that our kids hear, when they hear defending the family, our kids know what that means, and
yeah,
we need to take it back to what it really means.
So in our ward in Chandler, Arizona, there is 4 young men that have come out to me that are gay, 3 of which their parents don't know. A big reason I stay is for kids like that. We have 2 families in our ward that are, the parents are mixed orientation marriage. One's in the process of a divorce, the other one's trying to make it work. Most of the people in my ward don't know those things, and if they know of situations like that, they don't know who it is. For those kids, my son came out at 13. So when we gave him, permission or encouraged him to step away, he was 15. If these kids are not able to or don't feel safe coming out to their families, they're kind of stuck sitting there with their families until they're 18, 19, until they go to college, go serve a mission, move out of home. That is 5 years of them being extremely vulnerable. to messages and totally invisible to most people. It's a protective factor when kids can come out, because even if somebody is homophobic, most people are decent enough to not say it if they know someone's gay. They'll say it if they don't know that somebody's there. So when these people know that these kids are gay, sometimes they're not going to be as hurtful. But, you know, like Shauna said, just expect them to be there. Watch what you say. Let them know you're safe. I wear a rainbow ring every day. When my husband attends church, which he's recently stepped away to, he would wear a rainbow tie tech. We're very public about it on Facebook. These kids know that we're safe. And sometimes it just takes one person that makes it feel better and not worse for them. Even if there's not a moment where you need to stand up and say anything publicly to counteract a hurtful message, them just seeing you there helps them. And I think that's one of the ways you can help Little C Church. So the next question, what can we do from outside of the church?
We're all looking at you now.
Well, this might not be what you're looking for, but I think one thing that we can all do is to be politically active. We can be aware of what's going on in politics, and the church in Utah is always very active in politics, and so we are a part of this community, and we should be as well. And I think that everyone should be emailing their legislators, writing them, showing up at legislative sessions when Equality Utah is, or wherever you are in your state, is trying to pass legislation that benefits the LGBTQ community. I think that's a really big thing and a big message. I think that's...
Do any of you have any questions? We have some more. Mitch?
Yeah, so you guys have experienced a population boom, let's call it, in Mama Dragons. And one of the things that I'm wondering is, you get a lot of folks who are extremely new to this. Women who are very green, and they don't have the terminology around yet, and they say things that are offensive to LGBT people, I think. And how do you handle that, and how do you nurture them and bring them along? And by the way, and confirm your numbers, because I'll be using this in a story soon. So.
at last count, we were almost 1,000. That's difficult, because with a group of 1,000 women, we have some that have been Mama Dragon for a week, and some have been doing this for 30 years. We have some that are very orthodox believing members of the church, and some that want to burn the church down, and everything in between. So it is a very wide spectrum. I think where it becomes the most difficult is when they're brand new, and they're trying to process. I'm sure when I talked to Mitch, I'm sure I said lots of homophobic things, not even realizing, just trying to, you know, get my head around it.
She did, by the way.
Thank you. You were supposed to say no. I just turned off the train of thought. So we have these new moms, and in our Facebook groups, we'll do posts periodically talking about proper terminology. Like, Jen Blair is awesome at this. She's been posting things like, what does the letter L mean? What does this mean? What is G? Like, what is the proper acronym? What? How does the A fit into everything? Like, so we go through that. Like, it's just kind of an education process, and they'll see other posts. But sometimes these new moms are really hard. Is there anything else?
This particularly shows up with trans issues, because the majority of Mama Dragons are mamas of LG or B kids, and so we do get posts periodically where somebody is like, okay, explain the whole bathroom thing to me. and so, you know, it's a safe place to ask that question. The mamas of trans kids can chime in and talk about why it matters that our children not be harassed when they use a public restroom, and why the laws that are getting proposed in a lot of conservative states are hateful legislation, particularly targeting trans people, and that that legislation in particular outs transgender women by trying to force them to use a men's room, and it outs them in a way that would make them very unsafe. One of the frightening things about being a parent of a transgender child is that you read the murder statistics of trans people, and they're scary. The majority of those murders are of transgender women, and the majority of those are transgender women of color. And so those bathroom bills that are very specifically targeting trans women put them at real and increased risk. And so we've had an opportunity to educate the mamas. And then, you know, 2 weeks later, we get a batch of another 30 mamas joining Mama Dragons. And we get to have those conversations all over again. but everyone needs a safe place to ask questions. And honestly, they need a place away from their children to ask those questions, because these moms need their questions answered, but they don't want to hurt their children by asking those questions for their child maybe. So that's why we're secret.
So the great thing about the Mama Dragon Facebook group is that it really is supposed to be a judgment-free zone. And mamas can come at all degrees of acceptance. And some of them are honestly in still a lot of homophobic ways, you know. I mean, it is a place where they come and learn. And we try to have no judgment, because honestly, if we're being honest, most of us have been there. And we kind of feel like when we were at a really vulnerable time in our lives, there were people there for us and for our kids. And ultimately, that's what it comes down to. We are there to support these women so that these women can support these children who were, like our kids, suicidal and depressed. And that's what Mama Dragons is really trying to do, in my opinion.
Can I ask a question about that?
I'm supposed to hand this out so people can hear the questions, but I don't know if it's working. I'm divorced, and so I have a son who I think may be going through this now. He's become very withdrawn, and his mother's not going to be a Mama Dragon. So what about the Papa Dragons? Where are they?
There is a Facebook group called Dragon Dads.
Okay.
And it's smaller and not nearly as cool as we are. But that's a great group. There is also a Facebook group called I'll Walk With You that is for LDS parents of LGBT kids. And it is a moderated group. There's no church bashing at that site. And it's not as fierce as Mama Dragons. For some parents, that's a very good thing. And that's a space that's open to both moms and dads.
What advice would you give me on what should I do? I mean, my son, I don't know what's going on with him. He's 16. I mean, I don't know if he's gay. I don't know it could be any number of things, and I just want to be there for him. What do I do? Just be patient?
So the question is, what do you do if you think your child is LGBT, but they haven't come out to you yet? I'll let other people comment as well, but my suggestion is to make sure in your child's hearing, in fact, whether you think they're LGBT or not, in your child's hearing, make sure you say supportive things about LGBT people, and make sure you do it more than once. That will help create a safe space for your child to tell you.
I think one thing that's really helpful is watch Modern Family, watch The New Normal. Anything that shows LGBT in a positive light, there's a bunch of different movies that would be appropriate for a 16-year-old. Anytime it's talked about or shared openly, like, it is no big deal. It is as normal to be gay as it is to be straight. And I mean, if you know of any gay couples, go to their wedding, take your kids to their wedding, and just make it like, yeah, it's no big deal if you're gay. Doesn't matter, love you no matter what. And you don't have to specifically ask him that question. If he knows you're safe, he'll tell you.
So we try to be a safe place. Like the best man at our temple wedding came out as gay a few years after our wedding and is married to a man and lives in Salt Lake City. And we have always loved him, and our family has always been close to him. And so we assumed that our kids knew that we were safe, but I think saying specifically over and over and over and over again that, you know, if because they hear different messaging at church and you're at church, and they, I think a lot of times they just, it's hard. It took Annie probably a year or more to come out to us after she came out to herself, even though we were supportive of gay rights. And but just saying, you know, it's okay if you're gay, if you have friends that are gay, if you know people that are gay, just very, if you haven't said it specifically and you know, very pointedly, then they just won't get it.
So I think that it depends on your level of concern for your child. If you're concerned about depression or suicide, I would say definitely sit down and talk to them. You don't have to say specifically that. You could give us an example of someone that maybe you grew up with who struggled with something, and you watched them struggle with it, and you, looking back now, you wish you'd have done something different, for example, you know. And then just tell your child, say, I want you to know there is nothing that you cannot talk to me about. If you are, and I would say the words, if you're gay, if you've gotten a girl pregnant, if you are transgender, if you are a Satan worshiper, nothing that you cannot talk to me about. And it will not change my love for you, and nothing that we can't get through together. And if you think your child is in danger, I wouldn't wait.
Yeah, I have a son and a daughter-in-law who have a 14-year-old daughter, and
it's not connecting. Sorry. If you push the cord in at the bottom, it might help.
Okay.
Getting closer to you. Sorry.
It's okay. It's still not working. I consider myself an ally, but my son, you know, grew up in a pretty liberal household. His wife from a very conservative household. So she's having a very hard time with the whole idea. Their daughter, and I confess, I don't even know what this means. She told them she's asexual. Okay. And, you know, so you can see I can't be of much help because I don't know anything about it. But I guess that's the big question. I mean, my daughter-in-law, Becca, has asked me, are there some people that can help me or whatever? And I just want, you know, and I actually put an inquiry on Facebook one time, and there were some people who volunteered, but she hasn't really acted on it yet. But I'm just wondering if there's something else we should be doing to help.
Okay, so... in addition to being transgender, my son Grayson identifies as asexual. Okay, so you have a grandchild?
Grandchild, yes, he's 13 and 14.
Who has come out as asexual.
Yeah.
What asexual means is that you are not attracted to someone physically, don't want to have sex with them, right?
Yeah.
My Grayson still experiences a romantic attraction. He's not aromantic, but he is asexual. Doesn't want there to be a sexual component to a relationship. You might assume, oh well, that's not a problem in the church, you know. We want our teenagers to not have sex.
But in fact, the huge focus on families and pressure to marry and to date, those can be challenging things for Mormons who identify as asexual. And things that they need an opportunity to talk about with other people there. Our Facebook groups I could potentially connect you to.
Good.
I think we have no idea how many asexual people there are, because that has not been something that people traditionally came out about. That is only now starting to change, so we really have no idea how many people are out there who could potentially use that conversation and support.
I just wanted to add that a lot of times kids who aren't comfortable coming out will come out as asexual or bisexual. My daughter came out to me as being bisexual at first, and that I've learned since learned that that was kind of a way of breaking the ice with her Mormon mom. So I just think it's so important to keep an open dialogue with, you know, let them know that you're not shocked to hear that. Asexual, oh, cool, what is that, you know? And that you're willing to listen and not, and be judgment-free.
That's one of the problems my daughter-in-law is having, really, is it is very difficult her to be accepted, you know. She wants to, she believes in being an unconditionally loving mom, but she's not sure how to do that.
Yeah.
If the kids got the wrong condition.
We always say, we love unconditionally. I didn't.
Yeah.
Until my son came out, I really didn't even know what that meant. I did have expectations on him. I expected him to be a deacon, teacher, priest, serve a mission, go to BYU, get married in the temple. Like, so there were those expectations. But one of the greatest gifts of having a gay LGBTQIA child is you learn to really love the way the Savior loves us, with zero judgment, zero condition, just limitless. And like it cracks your heart so wide open. I mean, I didn't even know that it was possible to love this much. And I wouldn't know that without having a gay child. So, okay, we have a couple more questions, unless anyone else?
I actually wanted to address what this gentleman down here was saying with his 14-year-old granddaughter. Mm-hmm. My 14-year-old daughter, she's here in one of the other things. It's not like there was ever any really big coming out. She just kind of talked to me about it. I have a female-to-male transgender son, and I have another daughter who's a lesbian. I have one child who's active LDS, has been sealed in the temple, and then I have my youngest that's asexual. So we kind of got the weird lottery. And I look at it now, I'm like, man, my ex-husband both come from gigantic families, which came from gigantic family, which came from gigantic family, so eventually it had to happen. But if he wants, I'll meet with him afterwards and have him meet with my daughter, and she is an advocate. She actually taught to We Exist and is going to get set up. She goes to online school. She's going to set up an alliance online for her school. She's very much an advocate. I'm not necessarily new to the game, to the transgender game. That's been a whole new aspect for me. But I talked to Nika. I talked to Nika yesterday, and she gave me some great information. And you're right. You do not understand what unconditional love is until your child came out. My son came out to me as bisexual. Then about a year later, as lesbian, and last year he came out as transgender. And when he came out as transgender, all of a sudden it just clicked. Everything I had ever seen, and he was 21 years old, everything I'd ever seen in his life suddenly clicked into place, and I'm like, that is exactly who you are. But I guess part of me is it's been in the last few weeks, my transgender son has been attacked by his dad's family for the path he is on, and I think that's probably where the dragon finally came out at me. I used to always say it was mama bear. Don't make me you go after my kids. I'm going to go after you like a mama bear does. This last few weeks, the attack on my son from an aunt who is bisexual coming after him and denying that space to him has definitely released a something much worse than a bear.
Okay. All right. Did you have any other questions, or you were just offering your resources?
Just more.
Okay. Okay, Rexy.
This is just a comment. But about 6 months to a year ago, Frontline, it's PBS thing on Tuesdays or whatever, they ran an excellent piece on transgender children. And if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. It was beautiful. I'm sitting here thinking, you know, if we could just do away with all the grown-ups in this world and let the kids rule, we'd be okay. Because children, this is not an issue. They look at each other and they just, I mean, it's like, does he have blue eyes, brown eyes, or green eyes? It's like no big deal. So I'm hoping with the next generation, unless they get too, you know, mentally hard, in my opinion, we'll see it get easier and easier. But where my grandkids are, it's just no big deal. They just love each other for who they are, as they are, and that's what everyone should do. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen. But like, I'm just sitting here thinking, how could we just
learn a lot from our kiddos? It's okay. All right. So, if there's no more, one more question.
When that policy came out in November, the first thing I thought was that it was obvious to me that this came directly just from men, straight men, and that women had no input in that policy whatsoever. And it seems like if there's going to be change effective in the church, it seems like to me the change is going to have to come from women. And so I guess my question is, has there been any effort or any thoughts in educating wives and mothers of church leaders or general authorities, wives of general authorities who may be more inclined and receptive to understand the issues that we've been talking about here today?
That's a good question. I agree. I think there needs to be female voices and male voices making decisions. Many of us have met with church officials, public affairs, you know, with some of the apostles. I've never met with any of the wives. There's some female church employees who work for public affairs that some of us have talked to. But that's another angle that I haven't even thought of. Thank you for that. Oh gosh. All right, we're almost out of time. Caitlin.
Just wanted to let folks know that the marriage book is very famous. And they had to do a conference, and they have our best practices for suicide prevention. And all of those materials are now best practices for suicide prevention. You're right outside.
Could you guys hear her?
Repeat.
Should I repeat it?
Yeah. Okay.
She was just saying that the Benchmark books, where they're selling the books over there, they have the Families of Forever DVD and the LDS Supportive Families, Healthy Children for LDS Families over at the Benchmark books. All right, we're good? All right, so we're going to have...
No, are you going to have...
Yes. Okay, Melanie's going to just close this out.
So, back when I was studying a lot of religious history, I studied a little bit of Mormon history, and I remember reading one day in the Journal of Discourses, and it was a discourse given by John Taylor, who was at the time the third prophet of the church, I believe. Historians, correct me if I'm wrong. Anyway, in the talk, he basically, and I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said that the reason that the black man was on the earth was so that Satan could have representation on this earth. And he said it in such a way that was, he wove it in with this, what sounded like a very doctrinal statement. And the subtlety of it was juxtaposed against the enormity of it, what he said. And the two, how subtly he said it and how what it really meant just struck me. And I remember for the longest time after thinking, what would you have done if you were sitting there in that room? Would you have been, you know, seduced by the subtlety of it and not even noticed the enormity of it? And how would you have acted afterwards? And then I become confronted with this situation where I feel that I'm faced with that same thing. How am I going to respond to things that are said that I don't think are right? And we're not telling you what you need to do, but one positive thing that we're seeing after the policy is that people are starting to think for themselves, and they're starting to pray and seek their own divine inspiration on this topic. They're really waking up to it. And if you want to talk about a separation of wheat and tares, it is happening. People are coming through as being true followers of Jesus Christ and being willing to open their hearts in love or being closed and not. So I just, we're just so grateful for people who speak up. Not that they have to, you know, ask for policy change, but just speak up for love and inclusion. And we're seeing that a lot. And it reminds me, it's reminiscent of before the policy change, the 78 policy change, when blacks were given the priesthood, people all over the church were speaking up and asking questions and saying, wait a minute, my black Australian neighbor can have the priesthood. Why can't my African brother who lives a better life than I do have the priesthood, you know? So we need to use our brains. The thinking is not done. God constantly gives revelation, and it's possible. So there's a quote, let's see, I thought Voltaire said it, but I think Edmund Burke gets credit. He says, the only thing necessary for triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. So let's follow the example of Christ, and let's show love and an extra measure of it, because there is such a great need out there.